Good day, this is Greg, and I'll be reading the Vermilion County News for Tuesday, January 28th, 2025. And starting with the commercial news, the top story today on the front page is titled New State, Indiana Border Bill Energizes Illinois Movement to Create Nation's 51st State. And this is by Carson Gerber, CNHI State Reporter. Harding, Illinois. Ralph Moses is fed up with liberal Democrats elected in Chicago controlling policy for the entire state of Illinois. That includes the state's high taxes, unfriendly business climate, strict gun control laws, and funding to help illegal immigrants, he said. So last year, the 77-year-old retired software engineer consultant decided to do something about it. Moses gained enough signatures to get a resolution on Calhoun County's November ballot asking voters if they wanted an option to separate from Chicago and its surrounding county to create a new state that better represents residents outside of the city. More than 77% voted yes in the deep red county, the state's third smallest, with just over 4,400 residents. That's in contrast to Chicago's 2.6 million residents, which is more than 40% of the entire state population. The response was, very simply, that everybody in the county feels pretty much the same, that we are not represented and our interests are not taken care of, Moses said. We get the leftovers. But Indiana Representative Todd Houston has proposed another idea. He wants disillusioned Illinois residents, like Moses, to consider joining Indiana by redrawing the state line to include their counties. We've got a lot of great things going on in Indiana, he said in an interview with CNHI. We'd love to be that alternative. Since 2020, residents in 33 counties have voted overwhelmingly in support of non-binding resolutions expressing an interest in breaking off from Illinois to become the nation's 51st state. That represents nearly a third of Illinois' 102 counties. Separating from Illinois is a tall order that requires approval from the U.S. Congress and the State House, where Democrats make up a supermajority. It's only happened three times in U.S. history. The most recent came in 1863, when West Virginia broke off from Virginia. That's why Indiana House Speaker Houston authored House Bill 1008, which would create a commission to discuss and recommend whether it is advisable to adjust the boundaries between the two states. Republicans put the legislation center stage this month when they made it one of their main policy objectives for this year's legislative session. The bill received its first reading in January and was referred to the House Committee on Government and Regulatory Reform. More than anything, Houston explained, the bill aims to start a conversation to let Illinois residents know that another option could be to join Indiana, which aligns more with their conservative values. We understand their frustrations, he said. I don't know how it plays out long term, but if there's going to be other solutions on the table, we just want to raise our hand. While experts say there's little chance of that happening, advocates like G.H. Merritt, who leads the separatist group New Illinois, said Houston's offer has shined a spotlight on their movement and validated their efforts. It was gratifying to have the Indiana speaker take us seriously and seemed to empathize with the situation that we have here, she said. A push to separate Illinois has existed for at least a decade, but the movement first gained traction in 2019 when Illinois Representative Brad Halbrook, a Republican from Shelbyville, introduced a resolution calling on Congress to make Chicago the 51st state. Halbrook said he still supports the move today, as Democrats continue to use their supermajority to push through progressive legislation created for people in the nation's third largest city not the rural parts of the state that he represents. There's this really bad policy that gets created that burdens hardworking men and women in the majority of the state, and they're just growing more and more tired of it, he said. That's the case for Moses, who lived in a Chicago suburb for 35 years before moving back to Calhoun County. He cited a cultural chasm between Chicago and rural Illinois, which he said is more religious and self-sufficient. For him, it already feels like he's living in two different states. Chicago has a concentration of people that has a different set of interests, a different set of needs, a different set of values, and a different set of ethics and morality, he said. It's like a night and day difference between the two types of environments. That's the reason Merritt and members of New Illinois educate residents on their constitutional rights to separate. The group advocates at the State House and has committees in 48 counties. Last year, members created the first draft of a new constitution in preparation for the split. For Merritt, forming a new state is the only viable option to break away from what she sees as the entrenched corruption within Chicago politics that leads Democrats to pass city-focused policies with no regard for how they might impact rural Illinois. You have an expectation of representative government, Merritt said. When you realize that you're being cheated out of that, you'll only stand for it for so long. Lorette Newland feels the same way. She spearheads the Illinois Separation Movement, which lobbies county boards and local residents to approve ballot resolutions gauging support for splitting from Chicago, like the ones approved so far by 33 counties. Their first success came in 2020, when 74% of Effingham County voters supported the resolution, creating a domino effect around southern Illinois. In November's election alone, 7 counties overwhelmingly supported the proposal. That got people's attention, and suddenly the media was interested in us again, Newland said. Now Indiana has noticed us too. But voting in favor of a state split through a non-binding resolution is a far cry from making it a reality, noted Brian Gaines, a University of Illinois political scientist. Getting those resolutions on the ballot requires only a fraction of the signatures needed for an actionable measure, like approving project funding or issuing bonds. Moses from Calhoun County said he needed to get about 200 signatures to place the resolution on his county's ballot. He personally talked to 157 people and got nearly all of them to sign. Gaines said although the measures have no teeth, they work well to express discontent to state lawmakers. It's easy, cheap talk, he said. That doesn't mean they don't have heartfelt sentiments, but it isn't really about policy change so much as opinion. I think that it's an appealing kind of symbolism. The same holds true for redrawing state boundaries, which would require the approval of both state legislatures and the U.S. Congress, a pathway littered with political landmines, considering that Indiana and Illinois are dominated by opposing parties, Gaines explained. He argued, the politicians and groups advocating for separation know this, but continue to tout the proposal to make a point. That's also the case in other states like California and Oregon, where groups are also pushing to create new states. It's like the people who've been saying, if Trump wins again, I'm leaving the country, Gaines said. I remember people saying that about George W. Bush, and very few ever actually do it. Even if the bill were to pass in Indiana, Democratic Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker would need to appoint 5 people to the commission. It's an action he almost certainly won't take, given comments he made last week dismissing the proposal as a stunt and slamming Indiana as a low-wage state that doesn't provide proper health care. For Newland, Pritzker's attitude only validates her feeling that Democrats don't care or listen to anyone outside of Chicago, and only fuels her efforts to overcome the odds and separate from the city. The American Revolution serves as inspiration for the work. It's one of those things that seems impossible right now, but it's the dream, she said. If colonists had waited until it looked more likely that they would win against the most powerful military on earth, they wouldn't have written the Declaration in 1776. Newland is still focused on creating a new state, despite the fact she's personally open to the idea of redrawing the Illinois-Indiana border. Some of her family has already moved to Indiana, she noted, due in part to the liberal climate in Illinois, which has seen a steady population decline over the past decade. Separatists use that as proof of the state's failing policies. Indiana Representative Houston noted more than 100,000 Illinois residents in the last few years have already abandoned the state and moved east across the border. People are voting with their feet on this issue, he said. So I feel quite comfortable in saying people are already showing that they want to get over to Indiana. Moses said he likes Indiana and isn't opposed to joining the state rather than creating a new one, but the logistics are complicated, considering his county is located on the western edge of Illinois near St. Louis. I'm not stuck on any one solution at this point in time, he said. What I am firm about is the situation has to change. How it gets changed, I'm not smart enough to say. But for Merritt, with New Illinois, the proposal to join Indiana isn't enticing or realistic enough for her group to abandon its efforts to form a new state. What Illinoisans outside of Chicago need is their own sovereignty to govern as they see fit, she said. We appreciate what it does that Indiana is talking about this, Merritt said, but I think in the real world, it's going to be a lot easier for us to just split off from the state of Illinois. Nobody ever said we had to stop at 50. Next, we have Danville Alderman candidate to face repeat hearing. And this is by Kayla White. Despite opposition from established leadership, lifelong Danville resident Jaleel Jones is continuing his bid to be included on the April 1st ballot for Ward 1 alderman. Jones is running against the incumbent Robert Williams, who is up for re-election. A week after Jones filed his petition to be included on the ballot, Alderman Darren York of Ward 7 filed an objection to Jones's petition. A hearing was held on Friday, December 13, 2024, in which the commission ruled in favor of Jones. Now Jones faces a repeat of the hearing due to an error made by Sandy Delhay, Election Commission Director, who failed to notify the public about the hearing at least 48 hours in advance. York's objection to Jones's petition centered on concerns he had regarding the legitimacy of some of the signatures Jones collected on his petition, as well as the lack of certain headings indicating Jones's ward on some of the pages of his petition. Jones, 29, who is raising his family in the house he grew up in, said his family, friends, and neighbors in Ward 1 encouraged him to run for a seat on the city council in hopes he could make an impact. My people put a lot of good energy and encouragement into me. They see that I'm a level-headed guy. I'm kind-hearted, and I'm a down-to-earth person, Jones said. With their support, Jones got started collecting signatures on his petition to be added to April's ballot, ultimately collecting 50 signatures, twice as many as he needed. I went down to the election office and I turned in the papers and everything went well, Jones said. Me and Sandy went over it and she said it all looked good. Then Jones received the news of York's objection. When the day of the hearing arrived, Jones and York both attended, as well as Delhaye and several others. At the hearing, York addressed the commission regarding his concerns, saying his primary motive in objecting to Jones's petition was to help secure Williams' seat on the council. "I've had the privilege of serving with Williams on the council for 4 years now. I know he's a man of integrity, and I believe he has the ability and the skills to contribute to the city council," York said. Ultimately, the commission ruled in Jones's favor, saying that York's objections to Jones's inclusion on the ballot were null because York does not live in Ward 1. The objector must reside within the ward where the candidate is running. Therefore, York lacks standing to object to Mr. Jones's petition, and his objections must be denied for that reason, the ruling read. Regarding the signatures, York questioned, the ruling declared that even if York's objections were not denied, he had failed to present sufficient grounds to deny Jones's petition to run for alderman. After winning the hearing, Jones said he thought the matter was settled. But another twist was to come when Jones was informed a few days later that something was wrong. Delhaye had failed to issue a public notice of the date and time of the hearing, as well as an agenda to the news media. This oversight amounted to a violation of the 1957 Illinois Open Meetings Act, a law which requires a 48-hour public notice before such meetings are held to ensure that the actions of the public bodies be taken openly and that their deliberations be conducted openly, according to the legislation. Because of this violation, the Election Commission was investigated by the Illinois Attorney General's Office and forced to schedule a repeat hearing of Jones's case. The new hearing will be held in early February, Delhaye said. Jones said he is confident he will still be able to run for the Ward 1 alderman seat, something he says he is passionate about due to concerns he has for the youth of Danville. "We need to keep pushing our kids in the right direction. And as a voice for our community, the alderman and the mayor and all the higher-ups of the community should be pushing everybody up, because the kids are going to be here when we're gone," he said. In a similar matter, Dr. Stephen Nocco, retired president of Danville Area Community College, was disqualified from running for a seat on the college's Board of Trustees in December 2024 when a Danville resident objected to his petition based on issues with Nocco's paperwork and questions regarding the validity of signatures he collected. Repeated attempts by the commercial news to reach York for comment have been unsuccessful. And now we're going to turn to the obituaries for Tuesday, January 28th. The first today is for Alan B. Carter. Alan B. Carter, 79, of Danville, Illinois, passed away on Friday, January 24th, 2025 at OSF Sacred Heart Medical Center in Danville. A celebration of life for Alan will take place at 1 p.m. on Thursday, January 30th at Second Church of Christ, 3350 East Voorhees Street in Danville. Pastor Tracy Thomas will officiate. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Park in Danville. A visitation will be held from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. on Wednesday, January 29th at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center at 3940 North Vermilion Street in Danville. And 1 hour prior to service at the church on Thursday, January 30th, 2025. Memorials in Alan's name may be made to Second Church of Christ in Danville, Illinois. John Vilkonskas Jr. John A. Vilkonskas Jr., a former resident of Westville, passed away at his home in Springfield, Oregon on January 17, 2025, at the age of 79. He was born August 14th, 1945, in Danville, Illinois. A recitation of the Rosary will be held on Sunday, February 2nd, 2025, at 4 p.m. at Sunset Funeral Home's Urbis Chapel, located at 414 South State Street in Westville. His family will greet guests following the Rosary until 5 p.m. that evening. A Mass of Christian burial offered by Father Timothy Sape will take place on Monday, February 3rd, at 10 a.m. at St. Mary's Catholic Church, 231 North State Street in Westville. John will be laid to rest with military honors beside his parents at Saints Peter and Paul Cemetery following the services. Jack Ross. Jack L. Ross, 72, of Georgetown, died at 4:40 a.m. Monday at OSF Sacred Heart Medical Center in Danville. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Rortvedt Funeral Services Crematory, 3 South Hodge Street in Tilton. And that's the end of the obituaries for today. We're going to turn now to a story from the News Gazette titled "Double Homicide Probe Still Very Active." And this is by Jennifer Bailey. Danville. 2 months after two people were killed and a third injured in a shooting at a barber shop on East Main Street, police detectives say they are actively working on leads and looking into tips. "It's still very active," Police Deputy Chief Terry McCord said of the investigation, which has yet to net any arrests. "There's a lot going on." The November 27th incident at A Plus Cuts resulted in the deaths of Keith G. Stone Jr., 33, of Danville, and a 17-year-old whose name has not been released. A third individual was injured. The local Three Kings of Peace group stated it would offer a $2,000 reward for information that leads to an arrest. Group member Ed Butler said the shooting involved rival gangs. Barbershop owner Terry Guard said he feels the shooting was targeted toward one person who had never been in his shop before. "A person came in, I didn't know the guy, came in and opened fire on an individual," he said, adding he came in for an individual, shot that individual, and on the way out shot another individual. "I don't know how or why," he said. "It's just a messed up situation. I'm definitely praying for the families. I've never had a fight or an argument in my barbershop." The shop has resumed operations. "It's unsettling, but we're keeping moving forward," Guard said, adding he's hopeful police will make an arrest. "It's a sad situation." He said people have reached out wanting to talk about it. "Negative things spread faster than positive things," Guard said, "so I don't want to add more fuel to the negativity." Guard said he's glad his reputation precedes him in how he does business and prides himself on good character, such that parents will bring in and sometimes leave their children there for haircuts. Guard has 4 employees. He said he cuts hair less now because he is leading the Danville Area Community College's new barbering program, and the first class started last week. Police ask anyone with information about the shooting to contact them at 217-431-2250. Arrangements can be made to share information privately. Those wishing to remain anonymous can contact Vermilion County Crime Stoppers at 217-446-8477 or vccrimestoppers.org or via the free P3 Tips mobile app. Tipsters are always 100% anonymous when contacting Crime Stoppers and receive a code to check on rewards. All tips are electronically stripped of any personally identifying information and are processed by third-party answering service. Next, we have another story by Jennifer Bailey from the News Gazette titled "Board to Further Discuss Interim President Process." Danville. It's been a month since Danville Area Community College interim president Randy Fletcher took on the college's leader role after previous DACC president Stephen Nacko retired. And DACC board chairman Greg Wolf said they've been hearing positive feedback. Fletcher has met with the DACC faculty. He's been working closely with Provost and Vice President of Academic and Student Affairs Carl Bridges and other DACC officials. And he's also been meeting and reintroducing himself to the public, being from Vermilion County and having previously worked at DACC. He's gone to a Rotary meeting, county principals and Vermilion Advantage meetings, Danville's Martin Luther King Jr. community-wide celebration, and other events. DACC board members met Thursday night for its regular monthly meeting, and it also has a board retreat at the college at 4 p.m. Wednesday in its board chambers to talk about the six-month interim president process. Facilitating next week's board session will be Illinois Community College Trustee Association's Executive Director Jim Reed. He will continue assisting the board in planning now with Fletcher in the interim and what the next steps are. Discussion topics are to include benefits of an interim president, components of a successful interim president and term, ways the board can assist the interim president, reflections of the interim president, and what the president needs from the board. "We're just kind of getting our ducks in a row," Wolf said. Wolf said they are planning a public survey on Fletcher, possibly by mid-February. Similar to when you do a national search, you bring groups in, community and faculty and staff and students to meet, but this will be for everybody to be able to respond to, Wolf said. But the goal is, over the course of the next 6 months, that everybody has opportunities to send us their feedback, he said. These won't be anonymous comments being able to be submitted, he also added. Wolf said once they have the retreat, the board should have a clear written plan of how they're moving forward. But ultimately, the goal is, over the next 6 months, everybody in the 507 Community College District will have an opportunity to evaluate Dr. Fletcher, Wolf said. They want the most people to be involved. We also think this is a good situation that, and we've never done any of this before, we feel like it's best because I've been on two hirings where you go a year, you do this search and you spend $100,000, it's a lot of time, a lot of money, and in the end you hire somebody and a year into it, you go, this isn't the person we interviewed. So I like this idea. We're going to try it and let people work with him, the board, the faculty, Wolf said. The DACC board normally has an annual retreat to discuss college business, but next week's is a special one, with new board member Lisa Martin sworn in Thursday night and the interim president process being different than what the board has ever done, and they want more direction. He's got to earn the right to become our permanent president. It's not a given. We're hopeful, Wolf said. It's a clean slate right now. Martin was sworn in Thursday night to fill former chairman Dave Harvey's unexpired term. Martin, who the board chose from three applicants, is seeking election in April to a full six-year term on the board. And finally, Brooke Tricelli, Director of Community Relations at the Danville Public Library, will speak to the Danville Lions Club at 6 p.m. Thursday, January 30th. They meet at Spanky's Banquet Hall at 409 East Main Street. And that takes us to the end of our time for this Tuesday, January 28th, 2025. Again, my name is Greg, and as always, it's been a pleasure to read for you, and I hope that you have a splendid day. Take care.